So our family has consumed a whole lot of HGTV during COVID. I'm just going to put it out there. We have. Watching a wall come down makes everything better for a moment. You know, more light, more space. But everything we watch, we look for signs of whether it was shot pre-COVID or during COVID or a mix of both. It's our little game. And then we shout out when we see a COVID influence. What TV have you binged on these days? Any great finds? Any guilty pleasures? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Robert Thompson teaches mass communications and media studies at Syracuse University. He's founding director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture. Bob, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
So nice to be back. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my goodness. I think, you know, I turn on TV and sometimes I think of you and wonder, what is he thinking in these times about how TV is doing its job? How has it responded in the pandemic? What are your insights?
Well, I guess there's a couple of things. First of all, this pandemic now has been going on since March. It's been the better part of 2020. And you still can't keep up with all the television, in spite of the fact that production was shut down, and in spite of all of that, and forget keeping up with all television. You can't keep up with all the good television that has been made available since March. So that was my first impression. The other was the way, and there are PhD dissertations being conceived of as we speak about this, the way in which when the pandemic came out, television responded with actually pandemic-related stuff. I suppose first the way late night moved right into the breach and started doing things. But then a number of series, alas, none of them very good, that dealt with the virus itself and was shot mostly in Zoom, social media kind of platforms. Love in the Time of Corona, NBC's Connecting, Coastal Elites. These were all full series that were done essentially in the idiom of the new Zoom environment.
Yeah, speaking of that new Zoom environment, what did you think of those, you know, usually slick late night shows, news shows, doing all of that from home in these online platforms?
Well, the first thing is I was amazed at how incredibly quick they kicked in. I mean, late night seems to rush in where fools are afraid to tread, or angels, however that thing
however goes. That is, yeah.
You're right, exactly. we had Colbert, who, you know, one night he was shooting in front of a live audience in his studio. The next night, they had decided to go in the studio without a live audience. Then, just a couple of nights later, they were in his house. He shot the opening from his bathtub. that happened alarmingly quickly, and all of the other late-night shows went into it. It took a little getting used to. It was weird not having the timing that laughter from an audience have. Some are better than others at it. But it was extraordinary how quickly it happened and how quickly we got used to it.
I want to ask you about that quickness, because are you seeing, you know, programs and series, a lot of it did pause production, sometimes pausing production for months. Have you seen units laying off workers? How has Hollywood responded?
Well, there's a lot of impact in Hollywood. First of all, while production was shut down, because, of course, a lot of people weren't working, people moved to animation ways of solving some of these problems. The Blacklist animated a portion of one of its half-done episodes in an interesting kind of way. The soap operas, kind of like Late Night, the other fools rushing in where angels fear to tread, they came up with all kinds of odd ways, using mannequins for intimate scenes and all of that kind of thing. But I think the biggest impact on Hollywood is going to be, after this is all over, we have now raised a short generation of people who are used to seeing new movies directly to screening. Mulan, I suppose, was a great example of this. John Stewart's new movie, Wonder Woman, is going to be released this way. And already this was going to happen. I mean, many people waited to see movies on streaming anyway. But this idea now that Hollywood realizes that they can skip the middleman of the theater. They've got the product. Now there's technology that they can simply stream it. Theaters don't have that luxury. They need the product from Hollywood to bring people into their buildings so that they can sell $7 popcorn to them. And I'm afraid when this whole thing has settled down that going just back to the regular way of distribution is probably not going to happen. And I think the future, movie theaters are not going to go away.
Okay.
They serve a purpose that streaming doesn't allow. But I think the balance of power, now that we've got this whole infrastructure of simultaneous streaming and theater release, sometimes direct to streaming, that balance of power has changed in significant ways.
Yeah, we've learned some skills. Bob Thompson, founding director of the Bleier Center for Television and Pop Culture at Syracuse. He's our guide to TV, movies in the COVID era. Has TV given you comfort, helped you feel connected in the pandemic, or has it only made you feel more isolated? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll continue this ahead on the Ideas Network. It is 2020 in television, and I will admit, I just got through Tiger King on Thanksgiving weekend with those couple few days off. I know it's curious. I chopped veggies, cleaned the house for Thanksgiving with back-to-back episodes of Tiger King on Netflix, flowing in the background as I went through the paces of a COVID holiday. So what TV or movies have been most memorable this year? How have you watched them? How have you consumed them? 800-642-1234. Conversation right here. Syracuse University's Bob Thompson is our TV and pop culture expert, and we have him for the hour. You know, Bob, I'm always like at least two paces behind. I mean, I just got through Tiger King. So I always feel like there's this delayed reaction with me. But I have to say, you know, it was something to watch. What did you think of Tiger King?
Well, first of all, two paces behind. You didn't get to Tiger King till Thanksgiving. Way more than two paces.
They say give grace here in the COVID era, grace.
Okay. I stand corrected. Tiger King was really something. And this seems so long ago, but back when COVID first, of course, we knew about it in February. It was being reported, but when it really hit many Americans, campus closed, kids were sent home, all of that in March. There were two things in early March of 2020. That I had never heard of. I suppose in 2020 I barely heard of COVID, but two other things were Zoom and Tiger King. And of course, by the within the next couple of months, those things were on the center of our entire culture. And the Tiger King, what does one say about it? It was goofy. It was almost Dada at points. But as you just found out over Thanksgiving, once you fell into it, it was impossible to extricate yourself. It was that old Lay's potato chips. Nobody can eat just one kind of thing.
Oh, and that's so good.
There have been a couple. I would look at sort of the COVID classics, and by no means are these the best artistically or anything. But when we look at some of the shows that really hit, Tiger King, of course, was number one. Then, and I don't know if you've gotten to this yet, Love is Blind, where there's this dating show where people couldn't see each other.
Let me guess, what do you think? No, I haven't gotten to it.
And then Emily in Paris. And then the most latest, Dolly Parton's Christmas on the Square, or as I call it, Dolly Parton's Christmas for the Squares. But it does what it does incredibly well. And all four of those things that really penetrated the culture, what they all have in common is no reference to COVID, absolute, complete kind of escapist sort of thing. If you're tired of, 3 hours of CNN or MSNBC or Fox News or the newspapers or anything else, these were shows that really provided that good old-fashioned, the way television used to be in the 60s, while the civil rights era and the Cold War and the Vietnam War were raging on, we were watching shows about talking horses and flying nuns. We saw a lot of that kind of thing in 2020.
Well, here's some non-reference to COVID. We saw that Apple TV acquired the exclusive rights to the beloved Peanuts specials, including A Charlie Brown Christmas. Let's cherish just a moment here.
I never thought it was such a bad little tree. It's not bad at all, really. Maybe it just needs a little love.
Oh, my goodness. So tell us what happened here. How could this happen? I mean, what in the world?
Say it ain't so. Well, first of all, that Charlie Brown Christmas is Charles Schulz's masterpiece. He was over a half a century. He did Peanuts and everything. But that program is as contemporary today as it was when it was made. Charlie Brown talks about being depressed. This was made in 1964 when Lyndon Johnson was, I'm sorry, 65, when Lyndon Johnson was president, before we had Prozac and all the rest of it. But Charlie Brown could have been a poster child for all kinds of the things that we've later identified. It's anti-commercialism stuff. It was a brilliant show. And that was one of the reasons when it was taken from broadcast TV and put exclusively on streaming, it got an incredible amount of backlash. In a world where we had an election news, we had COVID news, suddenly the fact that Charlie Brown Christmas wasn't going to be on broadcast TV was the new big scandal.
That was the last straw.
Yes, 2020. How dare you? So and Apple buckled. They made a deal with PBS, not in time for the Great Pumpkin, but in time for the Thanksgiving one and for the Christmas one.
And we have to pause there with Bob Thompson. We'll pick this up. News update is next on the Ideas Network. Let's get back to our conversation with Syracuse University's Bob Thompson and what made his watch list in this COVID era. He's a professor of television and pop culture, author of 6 books on television. Conversation is here, and what television made you surprised this year? What made you laugh? What drew you in? 800-642-1234. Join in here, 800-642-1234. And Bob's with us for 10 more minutes. So, Bob, as we were talking there about A Charlie Brown Christmas, we didn't get to the actual peak there, that on December 13th on PBS, it is ad-free, and we get to watch it.
Right. So, and there was a window that Apple was going to allow it to be free as well, but that assumed that you had an internet connection, that you had a computer to get that, and you had the technological skills to do that. So it will be back on PBS on one day, December 13th. And I guess, you know, that's the way I used to watch these shows when I was a kid. It was on once, you mm-hmm. watched it, or tough luck. You had to wait until the next year. Now, of course, we've got a VCR generation that grew up being able to watch these on VHS, and now a streaming generation who can watch them whenever they feel like it.
Yeah. Well, I want to get to some more TV here, and I understand that you're a big fan of Fargo, which just wrapped up the 4th season. What do you like about it?
Yeah, I mean, there are 2 series now on the air that, and if anybody needs a binge recommendation, if you haven't started Fargo or Better Call Saul, mm-hmm. this is a great time now to start from the very beginning. With Better Call Saul, I guess you got to start on Breaking Bad. But Fargo is, every season is, of course, completely different. There are these anthology series like American Horror Story and so forth. And they are consistently surprising, the cinematography is beautiful. The acting is quirky. It's just one of those things. When I was a kid growing up, the thought that television could ever do something like this would have seemed impossible. For that matter, the thought that movies could ever do something like this back then would have seemed impossible.
Well, when I do get around to watching Fargo, the TV series, I will be looking for, you know, those little nods to our beloved 1996 matriarch Fargo film. Are there any of those little things in there?
Yeah, well, but fortunately not in cute sorts of ways. But the whole idea, what was that, Ferlinghetti, Getty, that poem, A Coney Island of the Mind, I think it was called. The TV series is really not about Fargo. The recent one takes place in Kansas City, not the Fargo. They've been in various other places. But it really is about a Fargo of the mind. And definitely it has that attitude, that spirit, the soul of the original Fargo movie does hum in the background. But now, of course, with all these seasons, there's a lot more TV version of Fargo than there is the original. By the way, a long time ago in the 90s, they made a TV pilot for a series, network series based on Fargo that never got picked up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I understand that the creator, Noah Hawley, once again, it's like he really collides with current events. And he told the New York Times that this show emerged into a country that was having an active and urgent conversation about race. And he said, you know, you just never know what the zeitgeist will be when your series releases.
Exactly. And the release was actually delayed. I think it was supposed to debut on April 15th. It was delayed several months. But I think really good storytelling is always going to be intersecting with both the time it's told and the time that it's playing in. And that was certainly the case with this season of Fargo.
All right, Queen's Gambit, what do you got for me?
Okay. I came late to this, not quite as bad as you and Tiger King, but later than most. And all my students started talking about it. It got Netflix's most viewed limited scripted series. And I have to say, the first episode had me completely, I was completely gripped. By the fourth episode, I wasn't quite so enchanted with it. But it is a lot of fun, and it's not too much of a commitment because it's only seven episodes long, and most of them are about 45 minutes.
I can do that. We have Bob Thompson, founding director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse, talking TV this hour. Join in with what you've been watching during the COVID era, 800-642-1234. There is one series, Something Creek. You can fill in the first word in a nice way, but what did you think there?
That was a brilliant show. It was delightful. It was breezy. It was kind of effortlessly told. I was kind of surprised that, what was it, the first hour and 15 minutes of the Emmy broadcast, literally every single Emmy went to that show until we got well into the second hour of the broadcast. I think perfectly well-deserved, but it's just there's so many great shows out there. I don't think I'd put it on the top of the list of comedies of all time. But again, if it's not a show that if you haven't seen that show yet, it's worth starting from the very beginning and taking the ride that it gives you.
We need to laugh. We need to escape. What shows would you suggest?
Oh, well, depends on what what one criteria.
I know, that's complicated.
We kind of talked about those. One show that I really, really liked this season, and it was sweet and it was kind and it was gentle, but at the same time it was very hip, was a show called Never Have I Ever. This was Netflix, and it's a typical coming-of-age teenagers were getting these things, one right after the other. But Mindy Kaling is one of the creators of this. And it's sweet and kind, but so insightful. And it was a show that I really not only watched because it was my job to watch, but I watched because I really liked it.
Plot Against America.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Now, if you want to escape, I'm not sure Plot Against America is quite what the doctor ordered. This is based on a Philip Roth novel, but of course they were they took a lot of liberties with that, and it is a highly disturbing. Another one of those shows that when the novel was written and when the show was made, didn't realize how much it would parallel some of the very issues that we were living through when that show was released.
Well, Nate in Eau Claire couldn't stay with us, but Nate watched Chernobyl during the pandemic. And Nate says, you know, this was my real first time learning about the Chernobyl disaster and my real introduction to it. What do you think about Nate's comments?
That's one of the great things about television and documentaries and fictionalized things is that we do very quickly forget massively important events. I mean, Chernobyl was a globally significant event. And if you weren't around when it was happening, and if you don't remember the coverage, and since in the United States, we tend to not talk as much about stuff that goes on beyond our borders, Chernobyl is something. I have a sneaking suspicion if I ask the next 10 of my students to tell me what Chernobyl was all about, the ones that could tell me were because they just watched the TV show, which was fabulous, by the way. And the rest of them, I think, may have all but the most very vague notion of what it was. And because of that TV show, I also, who remember Chernobyl, learned a lot more of the subtleties and the complexities of that story than I had known when I was simply covering it, or watching it being covered on the news.
Watching it in at that time.
Highly recommend that show. It's very, very good.
Yeah, you've said that there's so much out there to watch, but there's also this ability with streaming to go back with that massive catalog of old TV shows to return to. Are there any that you're revisiting or, you know, discovering for the first time?
Right. Well, you know, that is a good point, because even let's say production shuts down and stays shut down for 2 years, if there was no more new television made for 2 years, there is a backlog, a bench that is so deep at this point that you could never catch up. You could never catch up with even the good stuff. But, you know, I guess it depends on how far you want to go back. We've now got an emerging batch of people who have never actually watched The Sopranos, one of the shows that kind of started this third golden age of television, as it's sometimes called. The Wire, for example, even Breaking Bad, Mad Men, these real masterpieces. If nobody has seen the very small number of episodes, only two seasons, of a show called Atlanta, Donald Glover's show, which I think is one of the most brilliant television shows ever made. Now would be a great time to catch up with that. So if you've finished The Queen's Gambit, if you've gone through The Crown, if you've done all of these more recent things, there are so many shows out there to watch, especially if you've got a couple of good subscriptions.
That's true. Oh, yeah, subscriptions. I think you might have a few.
Yeah, but see, now that's the one issue that always is kind of the dark cloud in this.
Yeah.
That great television is really kind of falling in that haves and have-nots.
Access.
And that's becoming more and more the case. It wasn't that long ago where the second golden age of television, the really explosion of quality, was on network. Hill Street Blues, St. Elsewhere, 30-something, Moonlighting, Twin Peaks. If you had a television set, you could see that for free. Now, to watch all of these things we've talked about just today requires Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, HBO, and that starts becoming something that not everybody can afford. And as you point out, until PBS and Apple made their deal, you even had to get Apple to watch a Charlie Brown Christmas.
Well, Bob, thank you for joining us. Always good to talk with you.
Always so much fun. Thank you.
Bob Thompson teaches mass communications media studies at Syracuse, founding director of the Bleier Center for Television and Pop Culture. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.